Now to our A to Z of nature, and we've got to the letter X for xerophytes. Dr. Ben Aldiss, wildlife journalist and broadcaster, looks at the flora and fauna that thrive in arid conditions and finds that the subject is anything but dry.
Like Q, the letter X might appear to pose a naturalist some problems. If we were in December, I could describe animals and plants associated with Christmas. But as we haven't even reached midsummer yet, you wouldn't thank me for reminding you of the onset of winter, especially in these uncertain times. So, instead, I'm going to write about a fascinating group of plants called xerophytes. The term stems from two Greek words, xeros, meaning dry, and phyton, meaning plant, and describes plants that are adapted to living in places where water is in limited supply. The classic examples taught in school biology lessons being the cacti of American deserts. Now you may think that there can be few places less like the Arizona desert than the arable landscape of Norfolk, and you'd be right. But there are places in our county where plants and animals find the going equally tough. If you read my piece on salt marshes and sand dunes in the January issue, you remember I mentioned xerophytes in relation to sand dunes, though I didn't actually use the scientific term to describe them. This sandy habitat poses real challenges to both plants and animals, most of which just don't have the right adaptations to suit them to such a harsh environment. Those that do, however, benefit from the lack of competition that is always the downside of growing somewhere where everything else wants to live. Marram grass is a brilliant example of a Norfolk xerophyte. Any one of us who has spent time at the seaside on a beautiful summer's day will be very familiar with its tough, spiky, cylindrical leaves growing in big clumps straight out of the yellow sand close to the beach. How many of you, though, will have bothered to look more closely? Well, students of A-level or International Baccalaureate Biology for a start, they will have peered at it down the microscope and marvelled at its clever adaptions, all designed to suit it beautifully for its dry, sandy habitat. Leaves of plants that live in more normal soils are generally wide and flat with a thin layer of waterproof and gasproof wax on both surfaces to avoid drying out in warm, breezy weather. As plants need to take in and give out both oxygen and carbon dioxide to live and grow, this waterproofing is interrupted on the lower surface by many microscopic adjustable pores called stomata, which usually open by day and shut at night. With around 7,000 of these tiny pores per square centimetre, leaves of oak trees can lose a huge volume of water vapour by evaporation, especially on warm, windy days. Scientifically, such plants are called mesophytes, literally meaning middle plants, and they occupy the centre of a scale that has xerophytes at one end and hydrophytes at the other. Hydrophytes, such as water lilies, are always surrounded by water, whereas xerophytes, as we've already heard, often have to cope with none at all. If marram grass and other xerophytes living in sand had flat, flimsy leaves like the oak, it would be a disaster, because any rain that falls on sand very quickly drains away, leaving the plant's roots incapable of replenishing any water lost through the stomata of the leaves. So how does marram grass cope? Well, it has a number of ingenious strategies. First, its leaves are hinged lengthwise, so they can roll up into a cylinder in dry conditions. If you've ever walked through dunes on a wet day, you may have noticed that the marram grass leaves are flat and wide, like those of familiar grasses of lawns or meadows. In damp, humid conditions, marram grass can afford to expose a bigger leaf area to the elements without losing too much water. This flattening of its leaves exposes the stomata, which in dry conditions are safely tucked away at the bottom of water-trapping, hair-lined troughs on the inside of the hinged cylinders. Both these adaptations allow photosynthesis to work more efficiently, allowing the grass to grow. A third strategy involves the upper layer of the leaves. Unlike those of oak and other mesophytes, the leaves of marram grass have a particularly thick waxy layer, or cuticle, on their upper surface. This provides extra waterproofing and guards against buffeting by gales, when a thinner cuticle might be scratched and worn away. Finally, as we can be painfully aware if we push through marram grass with bare legs, each leaf tip is armed with a sharp spine. This provides some protection against herbivores that might otherwise welcome a refreshingly juicy bite to eat in hot, dry conditions. Other sarophytes of sand dunes and sandy beaches include the sea holly, with its thick, waxy, spiny leaves, whose bluish-gray surfaces reflect some of the sun's heat to reduce evaporation. Another is saltwort. This prickly plant is less robust than marram grass or sea holly, but its succulent stem and leaves have a reduced surface area to cut down evaporation, and they store water like a cactus to tide the plant over in times of drought. Its roots are extensive and lie close to the surface to absorb as much rain as possible before the water percolates through the sand and drains away. You don't have to go to the beach to see sarophytes, though. I'll finish with some sarophytes that we see nearly every day, yet possibly don't give a second glance. I'm referring to mosses that grow on sunny walls. Basically, there are two types of mosses. Pleurocarpus mosses are straggly, often untidy-looking plants that usually grow in damp places. Acrocarpus mosses, on the other hand, are those cushion-shaped ones with closely packed stems that live on rocks and the tops of south-facing garden walls. It may never have occurred to you, but on a hot midsummer's day, these have to withstand temperatures in excess of 70 degrees Celsius, and their water supply completely dries out very quickly after rain. Yet somehow they survive. Apparently, specimens of such Acrocarpus mosses that have been kept in envelopes in dry museum drawers for 50 years or more have been known to spring back to life if wetted with a few drops of water. It's a pity I don't have more space to pass on some of my enthusiasm for these fascinating plants, but I'll end by mentioning some tiny animals whose entire life is spent inhabiting these moss cushions. Called tardigrades, these creatures are barely visible to the naked eye and are unlike any other animal known to science. With a curious circular mouth and eight stumpy legs ending in hooks, they lumber about the water between the moss stems, looking surprisingly like miniature bears, hence their alternative name, bear animalcule. One zoologist, who was clearly a fan of A.A. Milne, described tardigrades as looking like Pooh Bear with his head stuck in a honeypot. They are amazing animals, capable of surviving exceptionally high temperatures and radiation, as well as drought, the record being that one was revived with a drop of water after 10 years in a piece of dry moss. Deserts may be dramatic places to visit, but if it's sarophytes you're after, you only have to visit the Norfolk coast, or just peer closely at your garden wall.